This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 241. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
The Demon Knights saddle up again. We've reached the threshold and breaking news. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, January 20th, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Before we start, Mark.
Yes.
It just reminded me about iTunes. I was in iTunes prepping for our new podcast.
Yes.
And I noticed that we have some reviews from 2008.
Mm-hmm.
It just strikes me as odd that we've been doing this that long.
That's right.
I want to thank everybody for listening for 5 years.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Demon Knights, number 16, by Vendetti and Chang. So a new writer has taken over for Paul Cornell, and more on him in a minute. It's not bad so far. I don't think it meets Cornell's writing, but I do still like it.
I did like it. Again, maybe Cornell is better, but I'm not ready to instantly drop it. I want to see where it's going. I liked what it has so far.
It's very intriguing. Now, we've skipped ahead 30 years in the story, but we're still in the Middle Ages, though. It's 1043 A.D., and bad guy Cain, who is apparently the Cain of the Bible, is slaughtering villages and turning people into zombie, vampire type things.
Well, it might be Cain, and it might not be
right.
Cain. We don't know.
We don't know. Meanwhile, Horsewoman has been tracked down and caught and brought to Al-Wadi in Moorish Spain.
I thought the interesting thing there was the interaction between her and her horse. Have we seen that before in this?
I think so. When the last time she had to change horses, there was like this telepathic type thing going on.
But then they ate the horse.
Yeah.
Ew.
So she's thrown into prison and finds Extoritos and Yistin there. We find that Al-Jabbar has brought them all there. In fact, he didn't want them thrown into prison. The guards just misunderstood. He needs their help in stopping Cain before he reaches Themyscira, at which point he'll have this army of Amazons.
I was thinking that kind of confused me because I was wondering how they would hit Themyscira, but that's probably in the Greek area,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they're in the southern Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
So that would make sense.
So they apparently need help, though, from Vandal Savage, who's currently torturing Jason Blood. Basically, everybody but Al-Jabbar is immortal. He's aged, but the rest of them really haven't. So Blood's torture is going to be eternal. He can basically be horribly maimed, and then he just heals. And his mouth is somehow covered in flesh, so he can't speak the words to become Etrigan.
Yeah.
So this is a very interesting setup for this story of 30 years later and how things are going to progress. And I'm curious if they're going to every once in a while do this where they jump ahead.
It sort of started reminding me of that Last Manum Xanadu title. And that got to main current day pretty quickly.
Right. But they've got 1,000 years to go through in this case.
Well, they would have then, too.
Yeah, but they quickly jumped ahead in that title.
Yes, I don't want to see them start jumping as quickly ahead.
Right. Yeah, they could jump ahead 30, 40 years at a clip, but don't jump ahead several centuries.
Right.
Threshold number one by Giffen, Rainey, and Collins. This is a new sci-fi anthology series. Appears to be these interlocking stories with both old and new characters.
So is this going to be the book that the Blue Beetle appears in?
Yes.
That they said he would see him?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where he's going to reappear. And throughout all this, you're going to get the same Keith Giffen sarcasm.
Is he going to be the writer through the whole series? Do you know?
For now.
Okay. Well,
never know with DC, but...
But right now, does it look like they're planning when they finish one anthology story to change creative teams?
I don't think so. I think these are going to be much more interlocking where they just continue a story, but maybe with another character.
Okay.
Rather than new creative team comes on and now they talk about this new person. So we saw the setup of the first story in a recent Green Lantern story with this alien planet that basically has a big reality show. Kind of like Running Man, except everybody can play, and where enemies of the state become the hunted, who get a day to hide somewhere on the planet, and then the game is on with big prizes for the winners.
And it looked like maybe ordinary people formed teams to try to go after the big reward that came if you got one of the hunted.
Right. And we see the planet's ruler, Lady Styx, working with who are basically TV executives. I enjoyed that. And Call, who's this renegade Green Lantern, is the next contestant.
Do we know how his Green Lantern ring got embedded in his chest?
We really don't, because I looked him up. He's a new character. He's not...
Okay.
When we saw him in GL, it was the first time we saw him. And he's helped by underground agent Stealth, who has the same name as a character from the old Legion title that Giffen was involved with. So I don't know if this is supposed to be a reimagining of that character or not, most likely. And then after this chase, they part, and then she's found by Rick Star Space Ranger, who's a new version of a corny 60s sci-fi character from DC. He's now in the gang, who one of the gangs involved in this hunt. And his leader is Tamara, as in Tommy Tomorrow, who another really corny character from DC's history actually was seen from 1947 all the way to 63.
Sometimes I like it when they take these characters and put them into a regular continuity, but only if they keep some of the flavor of the character.
Right.
I like the funnier, cornier things involved with the seriouser storylines. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Well, and we're also going to see, they've announced, the reappearance of Captain Carrot is going to reappear in this.
Mm.
Of course, he's going to be K-Rot or something like that. So,
why do space people like apostrophes so much?
I think they're trying to say that some of the name is unpronounceable by humans, so that's why you get this
glottal stop
thing. And then there's a backup story with Larfleeze. Yay! So we get his version of his backstory, which he's telling as his tale to put in the book of Larfleeze, just because the Guardians have a book, so he wants a book. And he gets word about this other Orange Lantern, who I think is referring to when Kyle became an Orange Lantern, because right now over in his title, he's trying to master all the Spectrum. And so he rushes off to stop this imposter, and when he returns to his lair, he's been cleaned out. Someone has ripped him off, which is the most horrible thing you could ever do to Larfleeze.
Right. You like the Larfleeze stories.
I do.
I'm still disappointed because we haven't had a Red Lantern Cat story.
Yeah. Yeah, where did
that
go?
That was promised.
That was promised, yeah. All right, some breaking news. We have more DC titles biting the dust. iVampire, that's kind of expected. It had terrible numbers. It only had 13,000 copies sold in December. DC Comics Presents, which is a shame, but also expected because it is very hard to get an anthology going. I think that's why Threshold has a better chance, because it will be more interlocking stories
because
and more of an overall storyline.
Because each successive story
leads into the next one.
Either leads into or relates to in some way.
Right.
Whereas with the DC Presents, it was a completely different story.
And new creative teams every time. And,
for every arc.
And so you have to basically get set up where every arc has a really good creative team that people want to read about.
I just thought that it would be better to have an anthology series like that, that was a one and done, because then you were introduced, you got the character out there, and people who liked the character would buy that one, but then the next issue would be another opportunity to get somebody else to buy it.
Yeah, in that case, you could almost do an oversized title that has more pages. That way you can do the reset of the origin and get a story in there.
Yeah.
I think that would work more than what they were doing with DC Comics Presents. But I'm not at all surprised that got shut down. I'm a little annoyed by the next one, Superman Family Adventures, which I really like that title.
Well, a lot of people did. There was much chagrin when that was announced.
Right. Now, there is a new Batman Kids title coming that's based on that, like, little Batman thing that we saw a while back where they're all kids.
Right.
And then the last one, as I predicted, Saucer Country. Since Cornell is essentially moving on, I didn't see how Saucer Country would continue. The issue is it leaves Vertigo with very little ongoing titles in terms of a monthly title. And does this put Vertigo back on the death watch?
Yeah, I checked Vertigo's website. There's 8 comics. That's just the comics, not the graphic novels, coming in January. There's 6 in February and March. And that includes those final issues of Saucer Country and Constantine. Now, there's a few minis that they've got scheduled coming out. The Sandman is a one-shot. Can you have a comics publisher with 4 ongoing titles?
Right. That's such a small imprint, you have to wonder why you would continue that. I really see Vertigo morphing into they just do OGNs or they do miniseries, that type of thing. They do special works, one-shots. Unless we see something major in the next, say, 30, 60 days in terms of announcements, and we're really too early for convention season to make those kind of announcements.
Well, you never know. Now, just hopping back to Saucer Country for a minute, this is a Vertigo title that they're not going to rush to a finish. Paul has said he's going to end out the story arc, but hopefully finish the story at a later date, either through another publisher or another format.
Right.
So I like that also.
Yeah, it's good that they're doing that. And generally, that's what Vertigo tries to do. They don't just pull the rug out on something very quickly. We also have some new creative teams, and this is very strange. Constantine's Robert Vendetti and Birds of Prey's Jim Zubkovich were both yanked as writers of their respective titles before their runs even began. So they were announced, they started doing work, and then DC changed their minds. So Lemire is going to be taking over Constantine, like he doesn't have enough to do. And Ray Fox from Amethyst is going to take over Birds of Prey. Clearly, there's just some disorganization in the editorial group from DC right now to do that. Either that or both of these people who were put on these titles were just so far behind or just didn't come up with good ideas. But I just find that hard to believe on 2 different titles. And then meanwhile, Jim Starlin is going to take over from Peter Milligan on Stormwatch. Now, I'm interested in that because Jim Starlin always did the sci-fi cosmic tales. So we'll see if that kind of changes the tone of Stormwatch.
Are you liking Stormwatch? Because I'm not reading it.
It's not as good as it was. Again, that's Cornell was writing it. Now Peter Milligan is. It's okay. It's not something I would pick up if I was starting a title. But we'll see what happens when Jim Starlin takes over. All right, then we have December sales were pretty much dominated by the final issue of Amazing Spider-Man. They sold 200,000 copies at $7.99 a piece. So that's a huge profit for Marvel.
And for the comic shops, because I know some of the comic shops were selling them on eBay for more.
A few of the others in the list. Number 3, Batman at $151K. Number 4, Justice League at $115K. Detective at $106K. Number 5. Number 8 was Batman and Robin at $89K. And at the other end of the spectrum, in terms of the top 300, number 258, Suicide Squad, 5,400 copies. How is this still being printed? I mean, that is so far below what you could possibly have to make any money. There's been no word of creative teams changing. So
I don't know.
Either they are going to have some major piece in a new upcoming crossover, maybe in the...
Do you know who writes Suicide Squad?
I don't even know right now.
I was just wondering if maybe it was somebody who said, I will only continue to write Batman if I can write Suicide Squad.
I don't think it is. I really don't think it is. Well, because we have the December numbers, we now have the overall numbers for 2012. So after a full year of New 52, we have the number one that came out in 2012, Walking Dead number 100 from Image Comics at 353,000 copies. A huge sale.
Well, and that makes sense with the TV show.
Right, right. Avengers versus X-Men kept DC out of the top 15 overall.
Wow.
Yeah. If you look at like number 2 to number 15, it's almost all different issues of Avengers versus X-Men. And then number 17 was the top one, Batman at 170K, which involved Joker's return. I'm guessing that's more like 13. And then Batman and Justice League basically covered all the issues from number 20 to number 38. The next one was number 58 was Action number 5, which sold 107,000. And then the first issues of that whole Before Watchmen thing, and again, first issues of these miniseries, went from 115K all the way down to 82K. And those all fell off fairly quickly after the first issue.
Now, are those over now?
Yeah, they're okay. All over. And in terms of trades, this, again, dominated by Walking Dead, but we did see Batman Earth 1 was the number 3 at 45,000 copies sold. Number 11, Superman Earth 1, Volume 2 at 23,000. Number 14 was Watchmen, the original Watchmen at 21K. And the true perennial, number 15, Dark Knight Returns at 20,000. So this is one of those evergreens that DC can sell year after year. And then overall, the top 300 comics in terms of monthly average sales, 80.55 million copies overall. And here's the breakdown. They went up 12% from the previous year, but they went down 6% from 5 years ago. They went up 15% from 10 years ago, but down 20% from 15 years ago.
It's a very cyclical market.
Exactly. All right, before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly?
Yep.
Okay, are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
All right, I'm going to press the button.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
Yes.
Is it related to an award show?
Yes.
Is it their Oscar issue?
Yes.
Okay, so who's on the cover? Is it one person or multiple people on the cover?
No.
It's nobody on the cover.
Yes.
It's a picture of Oscar, yes. The statue on the cover.
It is a picture of Oscar. I was going to end when you said it was the Oscar issue. But yeah, it's their typical, I think they might have had multiple covers,
mm-hmm.
But the one we got was just the Oscar on the cover. So
that makes sense. All right. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my Star Trek DS9 series review. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.